Hi, I'm Alan Phillips, and welcome to What's Good Miami. This week, we are super honored to have Dina Goldentayer here, the queen of Miami real estate, the billion-dollar baddie, the executive director of sales, and top individual agent at Douglas Elliman. She has sold over $3 billion in real estate since 2021, and she looks good doing it. Dina, it is awesome to have you here.
Thanks.
I think we are really honored. And I can't wait to talk to you about your love for Miami and your amazing career and family. And it's just great to have you here.
So good to be here.
All right. Well, let's start with a little bit about like your story. Like what's sitting in front of me is this like incredibly glamorous human being who's achieved so much. I noticed you were born actually in Moscow.
Moldova.
Yes. My neighbor's from Moldova. This is the only other person I ever met from Moldova.
In Miami from Moldova. It's the least glamorous of the former republics.
Okay.
But I made a real effort for you today.
So you were born there. When did you move?
When I was 7 years old.
When you were 7 years old, yeah. You moved from Moldova.
To Baltimore, Maryland.
To Baltimore.
Where I grew up.
This is unusual. My wife was born in Iran, mm-hmm. and moved to Maryland when she was 8.
Kind of a coincidence.
Yeah, kind of a coincidence. So why did you, first of all, how did that all go down?
Sure.
And I'm interested because, really, you're living a very beautiful and glamorous existence right now, but I'm sure there was a journey that got you here.
I mean, everyone in Miami Beach has a relatively glamorous life. Like, we are all lucky to call it home.
Yeah.
For me, we immigrated through an organization called HIAS, which helped Jewish people get out of the former Soviet republics.
Yeah.
So that's my story. That's how I ended up in America.
So my grandfather, generations ago, did the same thing from the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And
my husband's from Ukraine.
He went to the Hebrew orphanage in New York.
Wow.
And him and his sisters came from Russia and then created their whole life here. Well, obviously, you're a little bit closer in time. So this is within your life. What was, do you remember life in Moldova?
A little bit.
Yeah? What do you remember?
I mean, just the basics, right? Like childhood memories, you know, our apartment, who my friends were. I think normal stuff.
Was it tough to transition?
It was, because kids in general, I think when you're an immigrant and you don't have the language and you don't have the right clothes, I think in general it's tough to come to a new country.
Yeah.
And be new.
Yeah. Do you think that, it's so funny. No? Alina, I didn't realize you were here. Alina, who's sitting right there, is actually came from the Ukraine to Canada, and then she just moved here as well.
Was it glamorous?
You lived in Moldova too?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's wild, right?
Yeah.
So she's just started working with us like 2 months ago.
Congrats.
She's brilliant, though.
Most people from my country or our side of the world are.
So that's what I was going to ask you. So you graduated from University of Maryland, where my wife went as well.
Wow.
And you graduated magna cum laude in government and politics?
Correct.
Right? And
with a minor in women's studies.
With a minor in women's studies.
My husband really, really hates people when I tell my minor.
And so how does that, and like clearly like you have some level of intelligence to like be doing this, and like to, I believe there's like a certain level of discipline that comes with that culture. Alina and I have talked about it a little bit. It's pretty cool. Her parents actually moved to Miami when she went to University of Miami to like keep the family together. I love this idea of like keeping the family together.
Sure.
I think it's beautiful, but also interesting. But like, what happened from Baltimore to the top of the real estate world?
Sure. So it was a pretty typical journey, right? I went to college. I thought that my career path was totally mapped out. My plan was to go to law school. I never wanted to be a lawyer, but I wanted to follow a path where that degree would be useful. So I thought I might be a lobbyist in DC, or be a sports and entertainment attorney, or sports agent, something like that. And then I decided that I was going to move to Miami for 6 months after college and be a cocktail waitress here because it was like the best, you know, time to be in that industry.
Cocktail waitress?
Indeed.
Really?
So, yeah.
Interesting.
So I was already
Were you brunette or blonde at this
blonde.
Point? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've been a blonde for a long time. So I was cocktailing in college to make, you know, some money.
Yeah.
But in D.C., you know, you make a couple $100 a night and it was like great. But in Miami, it was like $1,000 a night.
Yeah.
And when I moved down here, it was cash, right? It was before all the clubs implemented, you know, taxing.
What was your club?
I worked at Mint.
Okay. I loved Mint.
Mint was amazing. Like my first week at Mint, my people that sat with me were like Sting, Janet Jackson. It was just like, it was.
When it first opened, when it was like green?
A little bit right after, when it was actually like the best club in America.
It was like insane. And that guy Roberto was wild.
Terrible human being. Anyway, so when I moved down here, it was with the sole purpose of working 6 months, making a ton of money, putting it away, and then going back to the Northeast to go to law school.
Oh, wow.
But that's not what ended up happening. What ended up happening is that my manager at Mint had
Roman?
Just got... No. Yeah, he was a bartender at the time.
Yeah, I remember. I thought he was the VIP host.
That's where he moved up to before he became the owner.
Yeah.
Anyway, my manager at the time had just gotten his real estate license, and I wanted to buy a condo, and he was taking me around and showing me places, and I ended up buying a condo when I was 22 years old.
Oh, wow.
And then I saw the process. I saw what he did.
What year was this?
When I was 22, that would have been 21 years ago.
Okay, so like before the crash?
Well, before.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I decided...
Because that's when it was like you could get the mortgages, right? Like...
It was just, you know, everything was very easy.
Yeah.
Real estate was, you know, propping up the whole Miami economy.
Yeah, yeah.
As well as nightlife.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got my license and I decided...
I threw my first New Year's Eve party at Amnesia in 1999 probably.
Okay, I was still in high school. Anyway, enough about age. I decided to get my real estate license and pursue that path instead of going to law school.
Really? So you fell in love with Miami?
I already loved Miami. That's why I decided to move here. Like, I had already been coming here to vacation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then, so you were like, I'm not going to law school. I'm going to get into real estate.
I got my license, exactly.
Because you saw, like, what?
I just saw the career path. I saw what it took. You know, I saw the process, and I liked it. And you don't need to go to law school to be a realtor. I mean, you certainly don't need a higher level of education at all, really. I changed paths.
So your parents?
Yes.
They were like cool with
that?
Not
that happy, no.
Because I feel like every like immigrant parent wants like a doctor or a lawyer.
I mean, that's certainly culturally common, but I don't think anyone's folks are that excited when you tell them, oh, I'm not going to go for higher education. I'm going to move to Miami and be a waitress in the club.
Uh-huh.
So once that, you know, once we got through that hurdle, becoming a real estate agent was like, phew. Because sadly, a lot of girls get stuck in that
it's
career.
Easy money.
Which for me, it was just like a stumbling block along the way.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't turn into, you know, a decades long path, which is a very difficult life to work at night with alcohol all around you.
Yeah, I've turned a lot of people out of the club. Like that was like a big, like there's a lot of, like there was a period of time like where people would, it's like easy money, you go get it.
Yeah.
But like there's a thing, I call it threading the needle. You have to thread the needle out of the club. Like,
for sure. I mean, the thing about it is a lot of successful real estate agents in Miami started in hospitality.
Yeah.
Many of them in nightlife. And if you can sell in that environment, which is very difficult, you can certainly sell in a normal environment, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you're a good salesman, like really it comes down to what you're selling, right? If you could sell the biggest and best thing possible, if you're good at it, you make more money.
If you're a good salesperson, you can sell anything.
Yeah. So how did you land your first mega listing?
My first mega listing? I have to really recall what that was.
Was there a moment where you were like, I'm really fucking good at this?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a moment. I've always believed in myself, but that's why your question, like, I have to think about it. I landed my first mega listing a long time ago, but it didn't sell. So that's not a moment to celebrate.
Okay.
You know, that was a moment to learn from, Right. I took a listing that was very expensive. I took it at a price I should not have taken it at.
They agreed to sell it at a price that you wasn't right.
Correct. I may have went along with their pricing to get the listing because I wanted to say, look, I now have a listing in double digits. I never made the sale. Okay. I wasted my time, my energy, my commitment to make nothing. So to be proud of that moment, no, that's not what I think of as a milestone of my career.
Okay.
You know?
What do you think of as, between then and now, is there one or two milestones that you would point to?
Yeah, I mean, of course, doing a $80 million sale in Indian Creek is a milestone in my career. Doing deals off market that no one else had access to. That's certainly things that I mark as, wow, I'm really good at this.
I assume you sold a bunch of $10 or $20 million listings before you sold the $80 million one.
For sure. But my trajectory was like 15 years of having a nice business and then 5 years of like really going to the top echelons of the country's real estate market. And it also had to do with the rising of Miami, right? You know, places like New York and Manhattan have had mega sales for decades. Yes. Miami really got going only 10 years ago, and only post-COVID did we start seeing price points that were making headlines in the newspapers.
So where was the switch that, like, so basically you're, what do they say, like an overnight success 20 years in the making?
That's exactly right? How it appears, especially because of social media. But yeah, it's exactly, my career is 20 years though.
So, but 10 years in is 10 to 15 years in is something flipped.
10 years in, something definitely flipped where I started focusing on, actually it was 12 years in, the luxury marketplace. And then the last 5 years.
Was that conscious?
Yeah, it was conscious. It was like, I'm doing the same amount of work, whether something is 500,000 or 5 million or 5 million or 25 million. So I consciously shifted and manifested wanting to do the same thing at higher levels where I naturally make more.
Yeah. Were you able to do that because of like relationships that you had built with people who were of that ilk? Like why did they trust you?
Well, you grow with people, right? Maybe you meet someone when they were in a $3 million price point and 10 years later, maybe they're in a $20 million price point. Uh-huh. But also as my network grew, those people started sending me their network. Uh-huh. So for me, it happened very organically. There was never like, oh, I met this one person and boom, my business boomed. It was, I met him, then I met her, then it started, funneling.
It was a flywheel. You put the work in, basically.
Yeah. The harder I work, the luckier I get.
So, but it, like, for those of us who don't understand, the layman here, including myself, like an $80 million sale doesn't happen like just with like two people, does it? Like, from what I understand, like when these mega sales happen, like first of all, there's only very few people who can make the purchase, right?
Sure.
So it's not like you're going out to market and you're like, oh, there's 10,000 people who can afford this listing. Like there might only be 500 people in the country who can afford that listing.
Oftentimes, it's just they're already in the community or they're already in the building. Uh-huh. Right. Like I sold a penthouse recently to someone who was already in a flat down below.
Okay.
Or you sell a big house to someone who's already in the community. So it becomes a really small pool of buyers. I don't necessarily have to cast that wide of a net for some of the bigger sales.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. So
that's really, really interesting because I feel like it actually, like, not that it would become easier, but I would imagine that the skill set to sell an $80 million listing is way different than the skill set to sell a $4 million listing.
Yes, I mean, it's true. I think that's more about trust, right? Uh-huh. Getting the seller of an $80 million asset to believe that you have the capacity to handle that level of negotiation, because the assumption is that the buyer is going to be a billionaire.
Yeah.
And that he or she is going to need to be handled in a certain way to get them to the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the seller having the faith in you as a professional, that you're the right person for that job to maximize value in their asset is really important, whether it's 20 million or 40 million or 80 million or 100 million.
Yeah.
And for some people, it could be 4 million, right? Mm-hmm. Most people, their home is their largest asset.
Yeah.
So when they decide to sell, they choose someone who's a trusted advisor because they're going to be handling the sale of the largest asset that they own.
Mm-hmm. Is that the case necessarily when someone buys an $80 million asset, though?
It might be, because what else could be more than that? Their company?
I don't know. I would just imagine that they, like, a lot of people have $80 million assets, might have like three or four houses.
They might, but they may be less. Mm-hmm. They may have a boat that's $200 million. They might have a company worth billions. But in general, homes tend to be people's... right.
Yeah. Is there a lot of... So are there other hands in those transactions, though?
Yeah, I mean, like, those people have a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, more than there would normally be involved in a transaction?
Perhaps. And that's why, in a way, I've noticed through the years that the higher price point transactions are actually, in a way, less labor intensive for me. Because those people, they have an estate manager. They have an accountant to consult with. They have an attorney that's in-house counsel. So their team's all are already ready to go. All I have to do is secure the asset. So I can really just focus on what I like the most about my job, which is being a matchmaker, right? Finding the right person for that specific asset.
Interesting.
As well as marketing. I really like marketing.
So somebody told me that, I don't remember who it was, but they told me that you said, like, Instagram changed your life.
It definitely changed my professional trajectory.
How did it happen for you? Sure. 'Cause, like, I didn't start What's Good Miami with any intention of this. Like, that was not my intention. It just sort of played out that way.
What was your intention?
My intention was to start making content to bring awareness to the marketing business.
Okay.
And then I saw what was performing, and I saw that people really liked when I talked about real estate, hospitality, and culture, and Miami.
Interesting.
And the more I talked about it, the more it grew. Then I did like one interview with someone, and then that took off. And then I realized that, like, if I'm going to interview people, like, I might as well interview, like, the best of the best.
Sure.
Hence me sitting you,
thank you,
here now. But, like, because of my network in Miami, and Miami's like a small town.
Yeah, no way.
I have access to really interesting people.
Sure.
Where, like, I mean, I'm a born and raised New Yorker. I moved here 10 years ago, and, like, you know, would this perform the same way it does in Miami and New York? Probably not, because what I do in New York, it would have been different.
It might be diluted also.
Yeah, but it might just be like, you know, in New York, the right strategy might have been like, let's be the best podcast in Williamsburg or something.
Right,
like,
right.
Which, but like, Miami might be the same size as Williamsburg, but the international attention of Miami, like, all of us, our kids are in the same schools,
right.
They're all hanging out together, yeah. Like, you know, you see each other at, you know, Pura Vida or this place or that place, and like, everyone knows each other.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like, it's not
it's more accessible.
Yeah, so it's an incredible opportunity, because for me, I think there's a lot of opportunity to do exactly like the kind of thing you're doing, which is dominating a segment in Miami, because Miami, like, there's a lot of things. This is a bad example, but good example. I was closing on my house 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And I needed a notary, like, last minute, because we were doing a remote closing. I had no idea that I needed a notary.
Your attorney should have set that up for you.
So my attorney was in Naples. So they were like, either you got to get a notary or you can come to Naples. I'm like, I'm not fucking coming to Naples.
That's ridiculous.
Right?
So I've never heard of anything like that.
Anyway, so the notary, I call some guy, and he comes to my house, and he does the notary.
Yeah.
Like, his business is 305 Notary or something. And that's all he does is go around doing that. And, like, listen, is he going to make millions doing it? No. But he's created a niche for himself in Miami where he owns a segment.
Right.
Right? In New York, you can't own being the notary guy. Like, it just doesn't work that way.
Right.
Anyway, back to where we were. I think I lost track.
I think you were talking about, like, the power of Instagram and what.
Oh, yes. So so you obviously, the step inside with me thing, like, you know, you're like walking the runways.
Step inside with me trademark.
Yes.
Not a thing.
Trademark. you're putting out a good amount of content.
Yeah.
Like, I believe content is not only king, it's the kingdom.
Yeah.
It's
good.
Like,
that was cute.
It's the thing. Right. But
it is the thing.
When did you discover that?
About 5 years ago, I started getting really serious about it. And it became, you know, now the first thing my team and I text about in the morning on our group chat is, what are we posting? Right? That's before, did you get the sign up at this house, or where's the broker open, or what are we launching? The first thing that we text about in the morning is, what are we posting? So it's that integral to the daily operations of my business. And the reason I'm so focused on it is because it makes me money.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm in a business that, you know, I enjoy, and there's a creative aspect to it, but ultimately it's you know, economic goals, right? I want to sell. I want to convert. And I want to deliver a high quality product. And I like that my Instagram conveys that, right? The messaging is, I like my job. This is fun, right? If you work with me, this is the vibe. I'm going to deliver,
yeah.
Right? There's not going to be a lot of sadness involved in the process, because...
Who has time for that?
When, who wants, you know, right? Like, I think people like watching good vibes, right?
Yeah, so definitely.
Obviously, it's not perfect. Sometimes I think I'm getting a listing and I don't, and I'm sad, or I lose a deal, but I don't make my Instagram about that. I make my Instagram about, I represent the most beautiful properties. Sellers trust me with the representation of those assets. If you're a buyer, you should definitely be calling me, because you might be missing out on something off market if you don't, or if you want access to the most high-end, most beautifully presented assets. That's what I want people to think of when they think of me.
Yeah.
So the more engaging I can keep my content, the more eyes I can have on my listings. So they only post my listings, right? Like, when other agents post other things that they don't represent, I think it's wild and I don't really understand it, because you're basically telling someone, go on Zillow, look what look that up and call that agent. So my Instagram is exclusively properties that I represent.
Well, you've also represent some of the most beautiful properties.
I choose to do that. When I'm sitting with someone on a listing appointment, if their house is, as you've recently used the word, fugly, I often make the decision that this is not aligned with my brand,
yeah.
And they should have an agent who thinks their house is
spectacular.
Lovely,
yeah.
And that person should represent them.
Yeah. Well, the worst thing ever is when you, like, see a listing and then you show up and you're like, this is, like, not... like,
well,
what it is.
It's also like, you know, when there's a first date, right?
Yeah.
Like, how a girl might glam herself up might not be how it is on a 10th date, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we make sure that our listings are dressed correctly for that, you know, prom night,
yeah.
Because your first impression matters. And if people live in their properties, we come in, I have a team, we come in, we hide all your stuff. Because even though my house might be full of toys, I'm not going to represent that to the marketplace.
There's a $30 million listing, $30 million plus listing coming on the market across the street from my house.
Okay.
And they have been doing so much work.
That's the right way.
On the house before, like, they have literally replaced the entire, like, facade.
Amazing.
The entire landscaping. Like, is this, like, when you're going that big with that level of listing.
Yeah.
Like, you have to show something's perfect, right?
I mean, close to perfect, because it's never going to be perfect, but we always recommend that our owners, if they don't have a house manager, because so many people in Miami Beach are absentee, right? They do not live here. It's not their first home. So we recommend our owners that don't have a house manager, hire one for 30 days to pressure wash their house, to paint the exteriors, to paint the baseboards, like the basic wear and tear that is just part of living in a home with kids, with pets, or just living. No one wants to see that, right? Everyone wants to see themselves moving into a space that is in its highest and best condition.
Yeah.
So if you don't take those steps, ultimately, like, there was actually an interesting story, a house like 2 years ago, the house smelled like weed, right? And they took it to market, and there were probably 30 people that looked at it and didn't buy it because they didn't like the smell, right? Which is crazy. The buyer ultimately ended up getting a phenomenal deal and probably spent a few grand to, you know, get rid of the smell.
Yeah.
So if you don't do things correctly and you go to market, the town ends up talking about, oh, that's the house with the messed up driveway, or that's the house with the really ugly bathroom, right? Like, it just becomes known. It hurts the asset. It hurts the value. So I think it is important to do a pre-listing process, which oftentimes me and my team will handle, right? We'll organize everything, make sure it gets done, so that when you do hit the market, you get top dollar.
It's interesting because, like, the brokers really have so much power. Like, I work on new developments. I'm working on a multi-billion dollar new development right now in Sunny Isles.
Cool.
And, like, when we're thinking of the marketing campaigns for the building, you are seeing, like that you have to not only do a marketing campaign for like customers, like you're really doing a marketing campaign for the brokers.
So true. Because right? the brokers,
because the brokers are the one who brings the buyers.
Yeah.
Right. So like if you have a new development, 90% plus
are sold by brokers.
It's yeah. not like you're not like really selling to, yeah. the, to the marketplace. It's yeah. really interesting.
It's true.
So do you have other brokers on your team or is it?
I have a team. I have certainly other agents that I co-list mm-hmm. with. I have agents on my team that help me with showings, with staging. I have a, you know, very high level yet boutique operation.
So you actually, rightfully so, like when I was selling my house, you actually like scooped me for a second. Because you put a house on the market on yeah. the Venetian.
Yeah.
That was really nice.
It was so cute.
It was very cute.
Yeah.
And like you came in at like a pretty low price.
I priced it correctly.
To sell it really fast.
That's correct.
So like I bring it up only because like it's like my opportunity to
ask you.
And then
you listed an overpriced.
I listed overpriced. I listed it overpriced because I had to get a certain number in order sure. to get what I wanted.
Yes.
And I did end up getting it by some miracle.
What did you get? 3.9?
I got 3.8 for that house.
Okay.
But it was because I had a former nanny, had someone in from Britain.
Wow.
And he came in right when I was about to rent it. I was literally a week away from renting it.
Wow.
He made me an all cash offer and
great.
Bought the house like right before I rented it, and I got like, God loves me, like, thank God.
Yeah.
But you really like came in, but that house sold really, really fast.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when I sit down with someone and they say something like, I don't care how
she
long
said
it
I
takes.
Overpriced it.
Because you did. when I sit down with someone and they say, I don't care how long it takes, this uh-huh. is my number, I'm thinking, like, is this the right client for me? Uh-huh. When I sit down with someone and they say, we got to go. What are we going to price it at to get an offer in the first 60 days? That's the conversation, right? So yeah. with those owners, that's what they wanted. They needed to place their money somewhere else, uh-huh. right? I could have probably gone in higher and had more showings
yeah, yeah.
And waited and whatnot. But when someone says, I need a number that's going to get me an offer in 30 to 60 days, uh-huh. obviously that's a dream for me as a sales professional.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I don't think anyone accused me of giving away their home. I think it's at like a price per foot record for that level of product.
Tell me.
Your house is bigger.
I don't think it is, actually.
I think it was, and I don't think you got as high a price per foot.
I'm going to check it now.
That house was like 2150 square feet.
Yeah, ours was like 2250 or something, right. But yeah, whatever.
We'll to each their own.
So we didn't get what's your name, what do you do? So you got to get that.
My name is Dina Goldentier, and I'm an ultra-luxury real estate specialist.
Oh, wow. She's definitely said that before.
No, it's new. I'm actually just trying that on.
Okay. How long have you lived in Miami?
I've been in Miami Beach for 22 years.
Wow. And where do you live?
I live in the Venetian Islands.
And what is your morning routine?
My morning routine, that's a good one. Okay, so my morning routine starts with a little bit of meditation, nothing crazy. I just express gratitude and set my intention for the day. Mm-hmm. Lately, I've stepped up my skincare routine and I'm doing some gua sha and ice roller ring.
Wow.
I drink hot water with lemon, and I just started taking 2 tablespoons of extra filtered olive oil.
Oh,
that's
wow.
a new thing.
Where did that come from?
Instagram. I was influenced by the beauty and health influencers.
I love them.
So they got me ordering some $130 bottle of very small olive oil.
Okay.
Then I go downstairs and I hang with my kids before they go off to camp or school in the school
two,
year.
You said?
I have two kids, yeah.
Two kids. What are their names?
Valor and Misha.
Very nice.
My husband usually comes home from the gym around that time, so we all hang as a family before.
Where does he work at?
He works at an anatomy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Or sometimes he's at Sunset Paddle because everybody's playing paddle.
I saw you've been like
you've been
Sunset Paddling a little bit.
I've been Sunset Paddling. I really have enjoyed the sport. Kind of obsessed with it.
People love it. Stephanie plays it too. We did the marketing for Reserve.
Oh, amazing! I love Reserve's marketing.
Yeah,
it's so chic.
We helped them launch the Solomia, and then we also had a Sunshine Coffee at the MacArthur one, the seaplane one.
Cool.
But paddles
is
like, Wild.
Paddle's incredible. I really didn't think that I would become as passionate as I would about it. But yeah, my whole week revolves around, right, like when I can schedule my games, right? So yeah. It's like, okay, I've got to get my showings in. I've got to spend time with my husband, our kids, and I've got to book my matches.
Do you play with him?
We do, and it's rough, but we continue to play once a week.
Why is it rough?
Because it's like, you know, there's so many memes about it. Like when guys play with guys, there's so much camaraderie.
Yeah.
When girls play with girls, it's so fun. Everyone's so supportive. But when you play with your significant other, it's really hard to be like forgiving and kind.
And yeah, some people get like competitive, right?
I'm very competitive.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah. There's no question about that.
So is my husband. So
yeah,
it's really hard to be like.
So when he comes home, then you bring the kids to school, but.
Yeah, sometimes we bring the kids to school, and sometimes we don't. Someone else drives them, and
then nice.
Yeah. Well, it's all about balance.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So the school is 40 minutes away. So when I can, I can, and then I start my day. I pick up the phone. I start corresponding with my team. Getting emails out, organizing, checking in. Doing my job.
What are you spending most of your time on?
Delegating.
Delegating.
Yeah.
Interesting. How much on content creation?
Probably a quarter of my day.
Yeah. It takes a lot of time, this content stuff. It's fun, though. I like it.
I'm a micromanager, right? And ultimately, it's my brand.
Yeah.
And because I don't find marketing to be a burden, I find it's a passion.
Yeah.
So I enjoy it. It does get to a certain point where I'm like, okay, now I've had enough of this, because it's like, the obsession to have everything be perfect. Sometimes it takes away from my core business, which is selling. But ultimately, I think I win so many incredible listings because people see the passion in the marketing.
Yeah.
So if you just spent 3 years renovating your home, do you want an agent who's like whatever about their presentation? Or do you want someone who every frame is perfect? The lighting is perfect. The edit is like divine. The text, font, size, right? If you're someone who's OCD about the presentation of your home, you're going to relate to me because of the OCD in my marketing.
Yeah, 100%. How often are you doing like in real life stuff like open houses and stuff like that?
Almost weekly.
Almost weekly.
I believe in blending the traditional with the more modern approach. Yeah. I don't think it's necessary to, stop things like open houses that have worked for decades. I have, in essence, given up print ads. All of my marketing dollars are diverted away from print ads because I've probably spent, tens of thousands of dollars on print ads that have never led to one call, so let alone a sale. Whereas with social media, you can easily track, I got a DM. Oh, that led to a showing. I made a sale. I made a commission. So it's just so much more effective.
Yeah. In my opinion, there's only like, I've boiled it down to like, there's only three things that actually work in marketing. Activation. So do something in real life. Mm-hmm. Content creation. And then once you figure out the content that's working, amplify that shit.
Sure.
And then do it again and again and again. And that's why I asked if you do anything in real life.
Well, the content creation is based on real life, right?
When we film, showing these houses.
When we film
incredible.
Day in the Life, it is meeting with my team to discuss what are we doing, that week.
Yeah.
It is us running around town. It is us fluffing the pillows and cleaning up and getting ready for a photo shoot, So the business drives the content, right? When we get a new listing, it's all about that new listing. I'm visiting, I'm setting it up, we're showing it. So we don't necessarily look to just do content that we think is going to do well. We're just doing the business and the content follows.
I saw you're wearing your own slippers.
I am.
How does that work?
Well, many moons ago, I used to wear a lot of high heels because I was, a younger agent. I wanted to impress people and walk into a room and really stand tall. But now I just really believe in comfort.
Okay.
So we were filming something earlier and I was in heels for many hours this morning. So I decided for you to keep it cozy.
I'm cool. Keep it cozy. I was just more interested in the fact that they're your slippers.
Well,
so do you guys make a lot of merch too?
Yeah, we make some merch. These came out of necessity because we have to make people wear booties, especially after COVID.
That's cool.
People didn't want shoes in their house and not everyone wants to take off their shoes. Like what if you didn't get a pedicure? What if you have a hole in your sock? So we started creating our own slippers so that people who didn't want to walk around barefoot or with booties, they can wear slippers in comfort.
I love it. I think it's a great idea.
Thanks. I didn't bring it for this purpose.
Did they take it with them sometimes or?
Yeah, no. They I mean, we're not going to reuse the slippers, so I'm happy to gift them to people after a showing.
This might be like a, I guess it's not a tough question, but I'm going to ask, do you think there's like something specific that you do differently than your peers?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think, and ultimately, I think I'm first because then I see them emulating. What I think I do differently is that I'm really focused on the aesthetic because I truly believe that the presentation is what leads to a higher price per foot, to a record-breaking sale. And I've associated with my brand not with just, oh, I sell a lot. I sell the best. I sell the most expensive.
You're Michael Jordan.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think that I am, right? Because he's prolific. He's an example of being...
I go running on the Venetian, and there's a huge, huge billboard of you in, like, a purple jacket.
This is true.
You know, prolific. Yes, I'm going to give you prolific. That's pretty prolific.
Listen, I've sold over 70 homes.
Miami, man.
Yeah, on the Venetian, that's where I live. It's easier to sell where you live because you can really sell the lifestyle.
Yeah, if you were the queen of Miami real estate, you're, like, the emperor of the Venetian.
I like that. I'll lean into all of that. The thing about it is, you know, I'm not trying to outsell everyone. That's not my goal. Mm-hmm. What I want to be known for is that if there is a beautiful house that has been built and the owner spent years building it and they feel like this is the best house in the neighborhood, I want them to think of me. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not trying to take every listing at every price point and do everything. I'm really niche. I like to be in a very small radius within let's call it 40 minutes of my personal residence. I'm not trying to be in a car all day.
You sell Palm Beach, you know?
Absolutely not. I do not sell Palm Beach. I do not sell Boca. I do not sell Fort Lauderdale.
No New York or anything?
No.
Like that?
I really have started focusing on being hyper-local.
Yeah.
So while everyone's expanding...
It's a good strategy. I like that.
Right? I'm staying hyper-local. I'm not trying to get on a plane to go show a house. I'm not even trying to drive to Broward to show a house. I'll drive to Coral Gables and Golden Beach. That's it.
So Golden Beach is the barrier.
Golden Beach is the barrier.
Yeah. Well, that's why I bought my house is because there's no oceanfront houses anywhere south of Golden Beach.
Sure.
So I was like, this has got to go somewhere.
It's a great neighborhood, and I think it's undervalued.
I like that about you.
You're welcome.
Like that about you.
Well, the first thing I was going to say, well, you're not actually on the ocean. Then I decided to be nice.
Yeah. She like it. Cut that. How do you...
Use it.
So you don't drink coffee?
I drink coffee on the weekends. It's like a nice treat for me. During the week, I stick to matcha and tea.
Okay.
Coffee makes me a little crazy and intense, and I don't really need any more of that.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you.
If I had a bad night's sleep, I'll drink a coffee. It's not like I have a thing against it, but I just don't like being addicted to any substance.
What is a hidden gem in Miami that more people should know about?
Caviar Russe. It's my husband's restaurant.
Okay, I didn't know your husband had a restaurant. I saw this Caviar Russe on your Instagram, and I was like, she goes out for caviar a lot. I was like, what's going on?
This is me promoting the family business.
I like it.
One in Miami in the Four Seasons, and then their flagship is in Manhattan on Madison Avenue. That one is like... You know, for me, when we go to Manhattan, we eat everywhere, but yet we keep coming back to Caviar Russe because it's just better.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So where is it in the Four Seasons?
In Brickell, on the ground floor.
Oh, wow. Caviar is really having a moment, too.
It definitely seems like it's getting a little diluted right now, but most of that caviar is coming out of China, and my husband's is not.
Okay. So it's in the Four Seasons in Brickell?
Yeah.
And it is a... We also write about hospitality and stuff.
Oh, cool.
I didn't even know there was a Caviar Russe.
Yeah.
So it's like champagne and caviar, basically?
It is, but it's also, you know, a continental tasting menu as well.
Okay. And has he been doing that a long time?
It's his family's business, and the restaurant in Manhattan has been there for about 25 years.
So you're both Russian?
He's Ukrainian, and I'm Moldovan.
So, yes,
so
we're breaking it down.
Well, when we left, it was all Russia.
Yeah.
So we were Russian. But now there's these clear distinctions because everyone's their own country. So
yeah. So, but
we'll stick to those.
Did you guys, connect over that culture?
Definitely. I mean, I didn't know that I wanted to marry someone from my own culture, but now raising kids together, I definitely see, like, you know, how much we have in common.
Do you go out a lot for Russian food or no?
No, but no. I certainly like it when there's home cooked meals at one of our, you know, at one of our parents' homes. Uh-huh. I do love Russian food.
Borscht?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Alina is a big fan of borscht over here.
Everyone from our side of the world is.
Yeah, I like borscht. Also, my wife being Persian, they share this salad Olivier with you.
Olivier.
So we make that salad at home a lot.
It's delicious.
That's a good one. What else? What's your favorite Russian food?
My favorite Russian food is pelmeni, which are like little dumplings.
I like it.
Stuffed with meat.
Do you go to like any of these like more traditional, like we're going to like have a dinner and a show type of thing?
You know what I'm talking about? I absolutely know. Those are the staple of my teenage years. Every Saturday we'd go to a place like that. Yeah. There's one in Hollywood, or Hollandale, called Tatiana's.
Yes, I've heard of this.
It's a big like Russian cultural.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
the dinner and a show.
My uncle lives in Sunny Isles, so he sometimes takes me to different spots.
I've outgrown them, but in my teenage years, every Saturday night, that's what's up.
Have you ever heard of The Hero's Journey?
Of course. I love it. When I watch a movie that doesn't have a hero's journey, I'm disappointed.
Okay. So I knew you were. There's depth.
We're clicking.
The
we're
hero's riding. Journey. Okay. No, I just know that you're smart. You're a smart person.
Thanks.
The hero, because not most people, you ask them about the hero's journey.
I can't imagine you're interviewing many people who are not smart.
Different,
I don't think there's a lot of dummies on
this different
sofa.
There's different types of thing. But the hero's journey is interesting because you said, like, it reminds you of your childhood. But, like, I think the journey is, like, you go out into the world, right? You, like, take on a challenge. Sure. You evolve.
Yeah.
Right? You reach these heights or whatever. And then you come back with a lesson.
Yes.
Right? But maybe, you know, so maybe in your, you know.
Everyone loves it. Like,
in the years in the future, you're coming back to Tatiana's, you know?
I'd go to the one in Brighton Beach.
Yeah. It's supposed to be fun. I have some friends who enjoy it. What do you love most about Miami?
Well, when I think of Miami, I really think about Miami Beach, right? Because I've only ever lived in Miami Beach. So I always make the distinction. I love the small town mentality. You know, I love that you can go to Pura Vida and sit there for 45 minutes. And sometimes we do as a team. We just go there and have a meeting because you can bump into half the neighborhood. You know?
Yeah, I started my whole business just sitting in Pura Vida.
Exactly.
Waiting for people to come in and be like, oh, you need marketing? You do marketing? Like,
right. Exactly. So it's not my intention to sit there and prospect. But because people come in with homes that I one day want to sell, it just works out that I happen to be there having, you know, an acai bowl. And I do love that about Miami Beach. It's so small. Everything's close. You kind of know everyone. And that's my thing.
I love that, like, and I think this is really unique to Miami, is this combination, specifically Miami Beach, but this combination of, like, international awareness.
Yes.
But small town, like, feel and operation.
For sure. Right?
The fact, like, the truth is, look, if I was in New York, I might not run into you somewhere, right?
I mean, New York, like, is smaller. It's certainly not Miami Beach, but having spent time in New York, New York is way smaller than maybe the perception of it.
Yeah. No, I lived 35 years of my life in New York.
You could bump into people in New York all the time, you know?
Yeah, but it's almost, I don't know what it is. It's like, it's just the conversations flow easier here.
For sure. I mean,
there's less like friction. I know there's different types of cultures.
Yeah.
Where you're like.
Well, you left New York for a reason.
I left New York just because I didn't feel like I was getting the value. I was the CMO of a publicly traded hotel company, and I was living in a 1,000 square feet with two children in Williamsburg. And I was like, I love Williamsburg. I love like my friends. I love like this made up thing that they call New York, which is, I call the big lie now.
The vibe. Well, when you watch movies from pre-COVID, you feel the vibe.
Yeah.
You remember, oh, this is what New York was.
Yeah. New York used to have like what I would say is a monopoly on creativity and a monopoly on big business. And like now it just doesn't have that anymore. Like you can live in Miami and be very successful. Like when I moved here to be the CMO of Turnberry, like I remember like one day I went to Starbucks to like get out of the office and they were like calling me and they were like, where are you?
Yeah.
And I was like, first of all, I'm CMO.
Right.
Second of all, Like, if I want to go get a fucking coffee and sit in a coffee shop, like, why do you care?
That's not Miami. My whole team, like, even though they get a lunch break, they don't really leave.
They were like, where are you? I was like, I just, like, I need to, like, go for a walk,
it's
dude.
So interesting.
Like, I can't sit in, like, this office with, like, my secretary in front. Like, yeah. I felt like I was, like, 1982, you know?
The year of my birth.
It was good. I got exposure to God rest his soul, Don Silver. That was kind of cool. And Jeff and Jackie, like, they do great work, but like, just, I can't, like, I need to move. I need to like be out on the street and like feel what's going
That's
on.
That's very New Yorker of you.
Yeah, it is. It is. But there's a hustle in Miami too. It's just a different hustle. So how do you share your creativity?
Through marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The great Dina Golden Tayer. I mean, where does that name come from?
It's Russian Jewish.
It's like made for selling like luxury
Golden
real
Dina.
Estate. Yeah.
It's definitely rooted in truth.
It's fucking awesome, man. That's Thanks. Great. Thanks. What personal experience, aside from working at Mint, has shaped your creative journey the most?
That did not shape my creative journey. That shaped my ability to sell expensive products.
When that, by the way, when you were working there, and I'm out of respect, that fucking club at that moment in time was amazing.
I know.
Like, it was amazing.
I know.
Like, there was no energy like that when they would put those green lights on and, like, people were spending, like,
but that's why I felt
fucking
like
wildfire.
I was 21 years old. All my friends were there spending money, getting drunk. I'm there making money, getting drunk. I was like, this is so clever.
Yeah, and then they had Rock Bar next door, which was kind of fun, too. Yes. It was like, it was a moment.
My creative side, I never really got to explore. Like, I was never a good artist. I couldn't draw. I didn't dance. I didn't sing. So
you didn't
really,
dance? I feel like it's Russian, like you're supposed to like do ballet or something.
I did not.
Really?
So for me, marketing really became the one place where my creative outlet could shine. I'm good in it. I enjoy it. And it's my thing.
Amazing. What's one piece of advice you'd give your younger self?
I knew that question was coming. I would tell my younger self, don't change anything. Just keep doing what you're doing. It'll all work out.
Wow. That's well done.
Yeah, because I think the expectation is to tell your younger self, like, how to do something. Here's the shortcut, you know. Yeah. But, I mean,
it kind of worked out, Dina.
I just don't like to think, I don't want to, like, wonder if I should have done something differently, because then you end up living in the past and having, like, icky feelings.
How do you balance like this thing you've created, this like this persona?
Yeah. Well, it's not. I really do.
No,
sound.
No, I know. No. Yeah. How do you I was gonna ask, how do you balance though? Like they say like there's this great quote I saw Timothy Chalamet say where it's like the world isn't like it doesn't make you, it's like it's outward, not inward. Like it comes from you. Like the world you create comes from within you.
Sure.
I don't remember exactly what he said. You may want to Google it and I can say it.
Google that.
Timothy Chalamet. But how do you balance this like ultra glamorous existence with like maintaining being like a good mother, a good wife? Like,
sure.
I feel like being a powerful woman has multiple definitions. Like it's like this.
Be careful there.
I'm going. No, I'm sorry. This is why this is good.
Yeah.
Like it has multiple definitions. So a powerful woman, like there's like, oh, she should be like, you're very feminine.
Thanks.
Like you're not like in a, like, I'm not talking to an executive who's like probably misunderstanding how to use her power. Right. But there's executives.
My woman studies major is about to come out.
Bring it out because there is. I've been in rooms with. I had a head of marketing at one company who was my like direct report. She was way more talented than me. She's amazing at marketing.
Okay.
And I was her like backer. Let's say I like at this company. The company was 20% female, and my team was 80% female.
Wow.
And she
so
was
like women in business.
I just like women in general. I think generally you're more intuitive and complex than
and more organized
than men. But what I was gonna say is like when she would assert herself though.
Yeah.
Like they wouldn't allow her to assert herself. Like she couldn't, no matter how many times I proved to the team how smart she was.
Yeah.
They wouldn't listen to her. Maybe, the men would just not listen to her.
Maybe that just wasn't the right environment for her.
It wasn't. Yeah. Clearly. But my question to you is, as someone who's achieved a certain level of success.
Yeah.
And like, but you are a mother, you're a wife.
No, I don't think that's the right way.
And you're a businesswoman.
And you are, not but you are.
Okay,
right? Because I get this question all the time, and I think it's very common. Like, how do you do it when you're also, men do it too.
It's very hard for me to be like, I put my kids to bed every night. Like, I'm eventually going to have four kids.
Right.
And I'm going to spend probably 4 hours a night putting them
to
bed.
Two hours.
Trust me, my wife, she gets really, like, she's pregnant right now.
Right.
So she's in bed waiting for me.
4 hours I'm is way to too bed. Long of a nighttime routine. You guys need to be more efficient.
Well, at least it's 30 minutes for Sunshine.
Right.
Then the boys, they like to talk. Right. And, like, we, like, sometimes listen to a book or maybe watch a few videos, right. You know, I get in trouble for
the
that
videos,
sometimes.
The videos, I was going to say, is probably what's prolonging your nighttime routine.
So
the truth
it's probably 45
out.
Minutes each with them and 30 minutes with Sunshine. And then whoever's coming next, like, this is
so
it's
I
a
just,
lot of work, man. But
I
like,
do not have balance, right? It's not like that, right? It's just...
I don't believe in that anymore.
Right. Everything is how it is. You know, some mornings I get 30 minutes with my kids. Some mornings I get an hour. Some mornings I get five. Mm-hmm. You know, I do try to do the nighttime routine every night, unless, you know, it's a rare occasion that I'm not home to put my kids to bed. Mm-hmm. So that is important. But the middle of the day, you know, I'm out of the house. I'm working, which is very normal, you know. But I think, like, when you talk about a woman's power, right, like, there are women who are in the house and their job is to maintain the household. And I think their job is way harder than mine, and that they hold way more power than me. It's just society is measuring success in many ways by monetary goals. And that's why someone in a more traditional profession is viewed as more powerful or someone to listen to more than a different type of caretaker professional, you know?
Yeah.
Because
no, it's hard to be a great mother and a great wife.
I am not shooting to be a great mother and a great wife. I am content being a good mother and a good wife, you know, because mm-hmm. that is what is authentic to me, right? I'm not trying to run to every play date and do every drive to every activity.
Yeah.
That's not what I have set up as my definition of greatness, right? I'm trying to spend quality time with my kids and be present when I'm there, uh-huh. as opposed to a lot of time where I'm not present because I'm on calls and sending emails.
There's a lot of this like thing that comes up though, is called, I hear it called mom guilt.
Mom guilt. I don't really have that.
Okay. I could say like, that's good.
I just feel like this is what my kids know, right? They're not, other homes are run differently. Maybe in other homes, one parent works, one isn't. Maybe in other homes, there's no nanny. We are running the family unit that works for us. And in the same way that I don't compare myself to other realtors, like, oh, she sold this, why did... I don't mm-hmm. compare myself to other mothers. Oh, she's at every, you know... That's not who I am. Like, this is what I'm capable of. This is authentic. This is done through love. And, yeah, I'm chill.
And you get time to hang with your husband, too?
For sure.
Yeah.
I prioritize
that. I saw
you
guys went on a good trip together.
Definitely. I mean, we're not like crazy about date night every week. We do what we can. But again, I'm not trying to fill some sort of void of I must do this to be considered great.
Yeah.
I'm just doing what works for me and my family. And that's just, you know,
that's cool.
How I stay sane.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it because I hear it from different angles sometimes.
Yeah.
I guess this kind of alludes to what you're talking about. We're almost there. But how do you define your success?
I define my success by my happiness, right? Like at the end of the week, I think about, hey, you know, why did I spend so much on this? You know, usually time. Did this bring me joy? And if it did, then I'm good.
If you could collaborate with someone of note or someone of note in your mind, who would it be and why?
That's hard.
An artist, a creative entrepreneur.
Sarah Blakely, the Spanx founder. I've been really digging her vibe lately.
She's married to a friend of mine, Jesse.
I follow him. Itzler. He's got a great Instagram.
Yeah. So Jesse and I opened a cocktail bar on the roof of the Mondrian Soho when I was the CMO of Morgan's.
Love
it's called
that.
Soaked. And it was, he went cold
press. The name is very controversial.
It was cold press cocktail bar.
Cool.
But he is, and I met her a few times. Amazing, like really, really nice person. But I know I spent a lot of time with him. And I would say top three most genuine people I've ever met.
They give off that vibe from their social content.
He's amazing, like just an amazing, amazing person. Like really like honest and real.
It seems so.
So I'm sure she's similar. That's awesome. Yeah, she's a good one. I like that.
Cool.
I for some reason, I also like, and this might sound a little weird, but I don't think it's weird. Like I like Skims.
Yeah.
And I like their menswear. And I was thinking like how brilliant it was that like, obviously Sarah made the youngest self-made female billionaire because she did that job and she did it well.
Yeah.
But the shapewear was like smart. And then like, I'm just so blown away by like Kim Kardashian and the Kardashians in general. And like the fact that she was able to like see, identify the playbook and then apply her brand to that was like brilliant.
She
like she's right up there too, man.
The consumer of the product.
She's amazing. I think they're amazing, honestly.
Yeah, entrepreneurial for sure.
Yeah.
So without a doubt.
What do you believe?
What do I believe in?
What do you believe, like something that you think maybe you believe that other people don't, or something that you believe deeply in?
I believe in family. I believe in hard work. I believe in creativity. I believe in authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in health.
Do you, I'm going to, just as an observation, do you ever compromise?
Yeah, I compromise all the time.
Yeah?
Of course. I mean,
but you don't compromise your standards.
I mean, listen, it's like I if you want something, right, if I want a certain listing and they want to compromise my compensation, yeah I'll compromise if I really want it. You know, I compromise all the time.
What's your happy place?
My happy place? Probably right now. I'm really enjoying summer. Right?
I knew sitting with me would make you happy. No,
yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Being here with you on your sofa is my happy place. I like Miami in this kind of like low season mode, right?
Yeah, it's best.
We're still crushing it from a sales point of view, but I also have bandwidth to do more of the things that I like, and I'm not like sitting in traffic for an extra hour a day for no reason. It's just easier to move around, and the town just feels really like mellow and enjoyable if you're in indoor air conditioned setting.
No, it's nice because like pre-COVID Miami, like you're going anywhere you want, whenever you want. And, like it's like that like COVID period where like you actually like had to like make a reservation for dinner,
right,
and like think about what you were doing. That was kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Still a little annoying, but do you have a favorite quote?
Do I have a favorite quote? Wherever you go, there you are.
I like that one. I like that one. It's true.
Yeah.
It's very true. Awesome. So honestly, I had a lovely conversation with you.
Likewise. It went better than I thought it would.
I really enjoyed hearing about your journey.
Thanks.
And I really respect what you've created.
Thank you.
And you know, I hope that we can remain friends, and I'll see you around the small town.
Definitely.
And if you hear someone, you know, yelling $1 billion baddie, don't be surprised.
You thought of it first.
But no, it was really awesome. You're a really special person, and
you are too.
Super fucking cool what you've been able to achieve, and I hope to be rooting for you into the future.
Thanks for shining the light on me. It was very kind of you. There's like a bazillion realtors you could have chosen.
So only one $1 billion baddie.